It's the Wild, Wild West. Hello again, friends. Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. On today's show, part two of our Western Conference over-under win total extravaganza with ESPN.com editor Andrew Hahn. Now, if you missed episode one, let me explain. No, there is too much. Let me sum up. Andrew dissed Mexican food. We bonded over the Lakers being awful. And then we both agreed that it's time for DeMarcus Cousins to boogie his way out of Sacramento. For today, are we hopping on board the Jazz hype train? Is Russell Westbrook going to average a triple-double? And finally, all the Luke Mbah-Mute analysis your little heart could ever desire. It's the Locked On Clippers podcast. All right, here's the rest of our Western Conference preview with Andrew Hahn. Enjoy. Now to everyone's darling, the Summer League darlings, the Utah Jazz. Now, Utah had a pretty interesting offseason. Traded for Boris Diaw, signed like 18-time All-Star Joe Johnson. How many years is it actually? Is it 11?
I think seven.
Seven? All right. Well,
always see the joke on Twitter.
So right.
All-Star Joe Johnson.
We'll see it once he has a couple good plays. So Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw, Dante Exum is coming back this year.
Yeah. George Hill.
They traded for George Hill. Hill, right?
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
So they made some moves to solidify some areas that definitely needed solidifying. They have an actual real point guard now. All of a sudden, the Jazz look pretty interesting. Last year, they didn't have Rudy Gobert healthy the whole season, so that definitely hurt him. Trey Lyles looked really good in Summer League. I don't know how big of a role he's going to have, but there's some pieces there.
And they got rid of Trey Burke.
And they got rid of Trey Burke, which is addition by subtraction all the way. I still came in a little conservative with Utah. 48.5.
48.5?
Is that too low?
That is really, really high, I feel like.
That's really high?
Okay. So this is where it starts, where I teased it that I jump off of things when I see too many people on it. And the Utah Jazz wagon is full. It is completely swole. It is full.
It is swole.
Everyone is on there. Clinging, they're like clinging to the axles, trying to stay on this thing. And so I've kind of gone the other direction, where they won 40 games last year, they're gonna win 41 this year.
That's why is that a thing? They're just gonna win one more each year.
I think they're gonna just win one more this year, and then next year you'll see them get to, I don't know, 47, 48. Okay. At that point,
you're taking a slow growth. Seventh in defensive efficiency last year.
Really good.
Even with Gobert missing time.
They had that bizarre situation where 2 years ago, Quinn Snyder looked like a really good coach, and then last year, in the final 6 minutes of games, it seemed like he didn't know what he was doing. I don't know what happened there. As if you can get yips as a coach, is that possible?
I've definitely gotten yips as a coach. I almost Chris Webbered my team the other day.
By like putting lipstick on and saying that you don't care anymore. Is that the thing that you're talking about?
No, negative. I didn't almost date Tyra Banks. No. I almost called a timeout that I didn't have.
Wow.
As a coach.
That's not good.
It's real bad.
I mean, they say that coaches don't really affect the player, a team's win-loss total, but that you definitely would have done it there.
Right, but when you call timeouts that you don't have, that kind of has an impact. Rodney Hood, another year of developing, right?
Yeah, we like Rodney Hood.
Hey, man, I don't know. I think 48 is 48.5 is what I have, Matt. So you're saying under. You're taking the under.
I would take the under on 48.5, but I do feel like you've convinced me that 41 is too low. Like, maybe 45.5 would be a good number for them.
Playoff team, right? For sure, right?
Yeah, for sure. The more I think about this, the more I can see my number was completely reactionary, because they might be one of the five best teams in the West.
Our friend Charlie Widows, who was just on the show, has the hottest of the hottest jazz takes. Have you heard this one?
I don't think I have. He has so many hot takes that...
I know. They come at you just rapid fire. He thinks that the Jazz are going to have a better record than the Spurs.
Okay. I like it.
Wait, you like
it? I'm on that take.
Come on.
That is a wagon I'll jump on. In the span of, what is it, it's been 2 minutes, I've gone from saying the Jazz will be incrementally better to saying that they will be better than the Spurs.
I need you to hold true to your beliefs right now, Andrew. Oh.
You know, my beliefs are, it's like that Chappelle joke where he says Coke and Pepsi taste the same, can't really taste the difference, and that if we want the truth, Pepsi tastes better because Pepsi's the one that paid him last.
So, yeah, all right.
With that, moving on to the playoff teams.
Moving on.
Last year.
Moving on.
The Houston Rockets, 41-41. Really disappointing season from them last year.
Mm-hmm.
They bring back our guy Pablo Prigioni.
Pablo!
Nene is there now. They pick up a pair of Pelicans and Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Dwight is gone.
Yep.
I have them only getting a little bit better at 43 wins, going from 41 to 43 wins.
Okay, we're not far off. I have them at 44.5.
Okay.
I'm right in that range, too. I would be more excited about them if they didn't sign the all-injury team this offseason. I mean, Gordon, Anderson, and Nene, they're tempting the gods, right? I mean, those guys are always hurt.
I like it. I mean,
they got good value. Yeah.
Houston is famous for looking for market inefficiencies and trying to figure out what the next play is. And they kind of went all in on this injury bug roster and hoping that the stars just align. And if they all stay healthy for a year, or basically if they're able to time those injuries, maybe what they're going to do is intentionally injure them very early in the season to just get it out of the way,
sure.
Get all the injury bugs out, and then they'll peak towards the end of the season into the playoffs and everyone will be healthy. It's like, what's the secret? It's like, you gotta hurt your guys early.
You heard it here first. Daryl Morey is gonna go Nancy Kerrigan on Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, right out of the gates.
We laugh now, but 2019 Sloan, when he's giving a paper about the right kind of pipe to use to damage your players early, he's gonna look like a genius.
That's a bold strategy, Andrew. Let's see how it plays out. All right, let's move on. Houston. So we're right in the same area with them.
They're certainly a playoff team, right?
Yeah, I think so too.
Probably hovering around where they were this year, the 7 or the 8 seed.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Probably going to be terrible defensively, but there's going to be nights where they score 120 without really breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
Now to a team that would score 120 only in their wildest dreams. The Memphis Grizzlies. Now, Memphis had an interesting offseason. They went out and got Chandler Parsons, finally addressing their need for some shooting by getting Parsons. They also picked up Troy Daniels. Mike Conley is back. So, pretty nice little offseason for them, yeah?
Yeah, I kind of like James Ennis, even though he's, you know, probably going to be the 9th or 10th guy on that roster. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
That's a resounding endorsement by Andrew Hahn for Memphis. Marc Gasol, we'll see what kind of condition he's in. I think their future kind of hinges on that. How healthy is he? Is he back to being the defensive of the player year guy that we knew a couple years ago? Or is he going to have trouble moving? That sort of thing. But I have Memphis... And new coaching situation there, too. Right. I have Memphis at 46.5.
Oh, here's our second dead-on match. I also have them at 46.5.
Ooh, clink.
Clink.
Yep, lock it in. All right.
I feel like Memphis, and this is another one that'll be interesting because I feel like Vegas traditionally puts Memphis a little bit low on the win totals just because no one really likes watching them.
Yeah.
They're a grinded-out team.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go as far as to say that Memphis might be the new Atlanta Hawks in terms of season total over-unders?
I don't hate that.
Because, I mean, traditionally, Atlanta was always an easy pick for the over because odds makers would put their overrun season over-under too low.
Right.
And then they had that breakout year, and of course now it's been readjusted to be more in line with how they actually are. But for there was a stretch there that if you just bet Atlanta over on their season total over-under, it was like the easiest play you could make.
Easy money.
Yeah. Memphis, I like. They've got the 42 wins with basically a D-League roster for the last month of the season.
Oh, absolutely. They clawed their way to that. I mean, if they win 42 games with what they had, you got to think they improve with some of the talent they brought in, right? And they finally have shooting now.
Yeah, I think Utah and Memphis will be the two teams vying for, like, the last home court spot.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
I could see that. I could easily see that, too. Okay, so Memphis, we're on the same page.
Yep.
Who do we have next?
That means we got the Dallas Mavericks, who won 42 games last season. I was really surprised by this because I thought they were going to just flat out miss the playoffs, given their hodgepodge. But is this like the fourth season in a row that they put together just a weird collection of guys that might be good, but you're not totally sure, and then somehow Carlisle like mixes it up in some Dallas alchemy factory, and then they make the playoffs?
The Wizard, man. Gotta respect the Wizard.
They brought back Darren Williams. Quincy Acey is over there now. They signed Harrison Barnes to a max deal. They kept Nowitzki, and they added Andrew Bogut.
Bogut, yeah.
I called him the Zombie Warriors.
Which I love.
Andrew Bogut and Harrison Barnes. They added Seth Curry, so that's there's even more Zombie Warrior action going on.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
So I have them pegged, let's see, they had 42 last year, and I'm going to stand firm with my Dallas is on the decline, despite the fact that I think Carlisle might be the best in-game coach in the league. I have them at 39 wins.
Wow, 39?
39.
So you're really thinking a fall off is finally coming.
Yeah, I feel like they've been staving off the... this is where not watching Game of Thrones really hurts because you feel like there'd be a good analogy here. But they're staving off the
winter?
Winter, yeah. The White Walkers?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Although you did just call them the Zombie Warriors, so now we have like a zombie versus zombie thing going on.
Well, in those situations, you know there can only be one zombie. Zombie Highlander.
Correct. That's totally accurate. We've seen that proven time and time again. I had Dallas at 42.5.
So you think they're just going to tread water?
I think that Rick Carlisle and Dirk Nowitzki are never going to finish under 500. Like, ever. I just don't see it happening. 42 okay. And 40 last year. They barely scraped by. That was with Wes Matthews and Chandler Parsons coming off of major injuries. Another year for Matthews to recover. Barnes and Bogut, I think people are sleeping on them a little bit. I think this backlash with Barnes has gone a little bit too far. So there's some sleeper appeal here. I don't think they have any real chance of doing anything in the playoffs, but I think they'll hang around and battle for the 7th or 8th seed.
So you think they will make the playoffs?
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I do think they'll finish over 500.
Okay. So, I mean, we have the same sentiment that they're going to just miss the playoffs.
Right.
But you're a little more upbeat about it than I am.
Yep. I think they'll be right there with the Minnesotas and the Houstons of the world.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Seems reasonable.
You didn't sound very convinced.
I mean, I was just trying to think what you had done for Minnesota and Houston.
They'll be right in that range. I could see them taking a little step back at some point, just because they're so old. But I believe in Carlisle.
I do believe in Carlisle as well. It's just I'm full of contradictions today, where I pick one thing and then I say the opposite of the entire reasoning.
You believe in Carlisle and you wish Quinn Snyder would not get the yips.
Right.
Is what I'm taking away.
Next on the list, we have last year's 5 seed, the surprise darling of the NBA, the Portland Trail Blazers. They were at 44-38. I think, am I the only person that picked them to make the playoffs, DG? Did you see anyone else pick them?
I didn't. You were the only person to nail that.
It was just me.
It was literally just you.
Yeah.
That was a bold take, by the way.
It was bold. I made that take off of 2.5 quarters of preseason action.
Don't ruin it by saying that.
I mean, that's sometimes you see, like, you see something and that's all you need to see.
Yeah.
But having said that, we should quickly go over the changes that they made. They kept Alan Crabb. Yep. Myers Leonard finished the season hurt last year, but now he's back and healthy, theoretically. They brought in Festus Cazili. They gave maybe one of the more confusing contracts in the offseason, Evan Turner, 4 years, $70
million. Yeah, what was that?
I don't know. I mean, Olshay, I feel like, typically is really good at finding value in the market and also finding good players in, like, the late first, second round, things like that. But I would really like it if someone could just sit me down and explain, like, if there's like a Spark Notes version of why Evan Turner gets this deal on that roster.
And if the plan was to match on Crabb all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It's maybe he just thought that Evan Turner's going to somehow be an asset when the cap goes up again. That's the only thing I can figure out.
I have a hard time seeing that.
The only other thing that came to mind when I saw that was that I remember when Evan Turner was a draft prospect, people said that he was a less athletic Brandon Roy.
Yeah.
And so maybe there is that nostalgia that was working in his favor.
Maybe Paul Allen was like, we got to get Brandon Roy 2.0. You don't even get to decide. Well,
it'd be more like Brandon Roy 0.5.
0.5, right. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah. So they had 44 wins, and I have them sliding back a little this year down to 41.
Ooh, 41. That's a pretty big slide.
Yeah, so sliding back a little bit. I really like them as a unit. They got our guy, Al-Farouq Aminu. Ed Davis was really good for them last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of feels like they snuck up on a lot of teams last season.
Yeah.
And people are going to take them. Not that they weren't being taken seriously last year, but they'll be taken a little more seriously this year. And as some of these crummier teams in the West start climbing up, those wins will come by harder, I think.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I don't know how much the ceiling has raised for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much better some of these guys are going to get. Like, is Vonleh going to give them something? Is Leonard going to become consistent for them? I think a lot depends on their big man rotation and if anyone can really step up. Like, if Plumlee makes the leap somehow, mm-hmm. I could see them being a lot better. But I'm kind of in the same boat with you. I don't think they're going to take a step back, but I don't see them taking a big step forward either. I am at 43.5.
43.5. So they lost half the game under your watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, because they were 44 last year.
Okay. Yeah, I got them at 43.5. So right about where they were last year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate that. I think they're very pleasant season was a little overinflated because they ended up taking down the Clippers, who were basically on crutches by that point.
Yeah.
And they stole a game from the Warriors,
right,
who were banged up. So it feels like they had a better season than they did, but, you know, treading around 500 is probably where they should have been this year. Not quite the 5 seed. They probably should have been like the 7 or the 8. And I can imagine just sliding back just a little bit.
I would agree. Okay, so we're finally here. The Los Angeles Clippers.
There it is. Locked on Clippers.
Locked on Clippers. We're here. So the Clippers, this offseason, Brandon Bass, Maurice Spates, they lose Cole Aldrich and Jeff Green and Pablo Prigioni.
Yep.
So the bench probably, equals out to what they were last year? Maybe a slight dip?
They added Ray Felton.
Ray Felton, yeah. Maybe a slight dip from last year.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. Well, anyway, they kept most of their guys. Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers, Wesley Johnson, Luke Mbamute, all back. Kept the core together. The band stays together. And with that in mind, I have the Clippers at 55.5.
Okay. They had, what did they have, 56 last year? 53 last year.
So getting a little bit better. Maybe Blake Griffin decides he doesn't want to punch anyone.
Right. That'd be helpful.
And we're in good shape.
Although the bigger issue with Griffin last year was that partially torn quad tendon.
Hmm, yeah.
Like, that was the thing that was bugging him more than the hand the rest of the season through. That was the reason why he was out for as long as he was. I mentioned this, we talked about this with the Kings a little bit, where you said you'd rather have Rudy Gay than Jeff Green. So I'm gonna remix that a little bit and bring it back now that we're talking about the Clippers.
Okay.
Would you rather have kept, if you were the Clippers, would you rather have kept Jeff Green on a multi-year contract? Or he walks like he did, and you get nothing in return?
Nothing in return.
Wow. It kind of makes that trade more boggling, where they... I know that Lance Stephenson is a mixed bag, but at the very least, we know he's an NBA player.
Yeah.
And they gave a first-round pick in order to secure 2.5 months of Jeff Green. That's just...
idiotic?
Increasingly... It didn't seem like a good trade at the time, and it continues to seem worse somehow.
Yeah, it was a really bad trade. That's what happens when you try and save a season with a deadline deal that didn't really make a lot of sense. Right. Jeff Green is an average basketball player.
Yeah.
In nearly every single way, the only reason he keeps getting big deals and teams keep acquiring him is because he's big and he's a good athlete.
I'll say this about the Clippers. When they brought back Luke Bamute on the biannual exception, I sent no less than 3 text messages saying, "Max contract players aside, this has to be the best value contract."
that was a fine deal to get him on the biannual. I don't even think any other teams are really even using their biannual.
Yeah, well, because they don't have to, because everyone has so much cap space right now that they don't have to do things like that.
Right.
But Luke Bamute at basically $2.5 million a year.
Steal.
It's incredible. He can start at the 3 for you when needed, play some small ball 4, and then, in my opinion, if they play teams like Golden State where Draymond's going to go to the 5, you can play him as your backup 5.
He's making, like, what, $5 million less than Wes Johnson a year?
I think, like, $4 million less than Wes Johnson.
Yeah, so, I mean, even that right there alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't even have to look outside of the Clippers roster to see what a good value he is.
So here's because I don't know if people have been following me on Twitter, but I have a deep love affair with Luke. Would you say that he's the best perimeter defender that DeAndre Jordan has played with ever?
Ooh, that's hard. Best perimeter. Is this non-Bledsoe division?
I mean, we can throw Bledsoe in there, too.
No, Bledsoe's a better defender.
I think Bledsoe is a better on-ball defender, but he doesn't necessarily help DeAndre be a better defender.
I would agree with that.
So.
But yeah, I mean, that's a great point, though.
I mean, everyone talks about how DeAndre Jordan made huge defensive improvements this past season. First team all-defense was considered defensive player of the year by some people.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, a lot of those stats were as a result of having another competent defender that was disciplined and someone that DeAndre knew would be in the places he's supposed to be in.
Right.
In years past, when you watch the Clippers and you see some kind of defensive misstep or something, one of the first things that'll happen is you'll see, well, what'll happen is they'll cut to the replay and show what happened, and then it'll cut back to live action, and you'll see DeAndre screaming at somebody. And that did not happen nearly as much this year because Luke knows when to rotate and when to pre-rotate and how to funnel guys in certain directions.
Right.
And I think that was a huge benefit to DeAndre, even though no one really talked about it.
I would completely agree with that, and I would also like to mention that, of course, you would come on and talk about Luke and Bamute when we're talking about the Clippers. That's the most Clipper blog live thing that's ever happened on Locked On Clippers.
I had the Clippers at 57 wins. So just a hair above where you had them.
Okay.
I personally think that they're going to end up as the second best team in the West.
I could easily see that.
They may not have the 2 seed, but I think they'll be the second best team in the West.
I could easily see that. The reason why I had them a little bit lower is just I was looking through past years. So 2014, 2015, 56 wins. 2013, 2014, 57 wins. So I think they'll be right in that range.
I think it'd be really great if they could crest the 60 win mark, because it seemed like that was going to be inevitable, and every season since then they've had some kind of issue.
Yeah.
60 wins, I know making the conference finals would be the chief goal of the Clippers this season, But if there was a second one that did not include winning the title, it would probably be getting over 60 wins in the regular season just to affirm that this is a legitimately good team and has been for some time.
Right. This is, well, I think it might have been ESPN actually had a dynasty rankings without a title. And the Clippers were like one of the top 10 in all sports of these this era, this last 5 years of best teams that haven't won a title.
Yeah, legitimately good. You could make the case that they had as good a shot as anyone to win at least one title in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So, 50. You have 55.5. So I guess I'd be going over since I went 57.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
One player has to get hurt. Between Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, who are you giving the injury to? It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. Can we talk like what kind of injury?
It's like he has to miss 20 games.
But nothing, but no like lingering effects.
No long-term side effects. He just misses 20 games.
I'd probably give it to Chris.
To Chris?
Yeah. Just because Chris is going to be 31 this season. If he's hurt and he comes back with no lingering effects, like his body could probably use the 20 games off anyway.
You give him the time off. That's smart. Okay.
Well, what would you have said?
Oh, no. I just think that's really smart. I was thinking in more of terms of who they could best survive without.
Uh-huh.
And I think it might be Blake.
Maybe. I think they've shown, because they've had stretches without Chris and Blake in this tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, they've done well regardless of which one has gone out.
Right, and now you got some decent front court depth behind them with Bass and Spates. And
right.
I don't know. That's a tough one. I'd like to hear, if anyone's still listening at this point, I'd like to hear what you guys think. Who could the Clippers most afford to lose to injury? Out of those three. Right. You can't pick Austin Rivers.
You know what, though? Like, I would throw Redick in there as well. I don't think they could afford to lose Redick for any significant stretch. He does so much for that offense.
He does.
Just an innumerable amount of things. But the answer to part of this is that Doc should start staggering Chris and Blake more to take better advantage of all the skills that they have.
Mm.
Which he seems reluctant to do. So, but anyways, moving on. We hit one of the big losers of this offseason, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Jeez, rub it in.
It's just facts. I'm just bringing facts in.
Facts only.
55 wins.
Yeah.
They make the conference finals. They were up 3-1. Ultimately lose to the Golden State Warriors. And then one of the prized possessions of the offseason, Kevin Durant, goes ahead and leaves for the Bay Area. They still haven't made a decision on Dion Waiters, even though they pulled back his qualifying offer.
Right.
They traded Serge Ibaka to Orlando for Oladipo, Ilyasova, and Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
I say that they're going to drop from 55 to 44 wins.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, 44 is pretty low. I have them at 46.5.
Okay. I think, what were they? They were at 41 that year that Durant basically lost. They lost Durant for the season.
Right.
So, something around there seems reasonable.
That's good. I can see where you would choose that. To me, they're one of the most volatile teams, right? They could either be pretty good again or be a complete disaster.
And that's not even factoring in if Westbrook ends up getting traded during the season.
Right, which is the big thing looming. Let me put it this way. I would be very uncomfortable betting on anything with OKC.
Yes, I would agree.
Extremely uncomfortable. If the line is anywhere from 50 wins to like 40 wins, I'm not going to bet on it.
Let me give you a different gambling proposal here.
Okay.
If I gave you 5-1 odds that Westbrook was going to lead the league in triple-doubles...
5-1 odds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
Who's going to challenge him?
If Rondo's healthy, you know Rondo loves to cherry pick those triple doubles.
Yeah. Is he going to have the ball enough? I mean, yeah, I guess.
Maybe. Do you think Westbrook could average a triple double? The thing that Oscar Robertson did?
I don't think he can average a triple double. I do think he can come close to getting a triple double in more than half of his games.
Okay.
Which would be crazy nuts insane.
If he stays with the Thunder all season,
he's going to come really close, I think.
You'd feel comfortable saying that he'd get at least 35 triple-doubles.
Yes.
That's a lot of triple-doubles.
That's a ton of triple-doubles. I think he'll come really close. Like, I could easily see him averaging, like, 29, 8.5, and, like, 9.
Yeah.
Like, pretty easily.
Seems reasonable.
I think the rebounds are going to be tough, though.
They're no longer one of the four best teams in the West, right?
I agree.
Are they one of the six best?
But they're close. Yeah, I would say they're one of the six best. So I have San Antonio, Golden State, Clippers clearly ahead of them.
Okay.
And then you're looking at Memphis probably ahead of them.
Utah
probably ahead of them. I have them both ahead of them. So I would say OKC is probably sixth, fifth.
So you have them in that, like, Portland, Dallas.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on. OKC. We have two teams left.
Two teams.
San Antonio. San Antonio Spurs. Tim Duncan. It's finally called it quits. So no Tim Duncan, but they replaced Tim Duncan with Pau Gasol. Manu Ginobili's back.
Yep.
They got, you know, it's pretty much the same team we're used to seeing. Boris Diaw is gone. So they lost, for the first time in a while, they lost some key contributors, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So are we sensing a big downgrade from their record? Now, last year they won 67, which I think was a little fluky.
They backed into that too, though. They weren't really trying in the last month of the season.
Yeah, maybe fluky is the wrong word there. I don't know that they're going to shoot for 67 again. Let's put it that way.
Right. But San Antonio, regardless of who they put out there, they always compete.
This is
even
true.
When they're resting their main guys, it's like they end up winning games that they probably shouldn't be winning.
This is true. Yeah. I have them at 62.5.
Ooh, okay. So this is one of those that I think we're diverging a little bit. I have them taking a slide back. I have them at 55.
Wow.
Because I am now fully on the... You know that wagon that used to exist where this was the demise of the Spurs, they're too old, and then everyone just kind of forgot where that wagon went because that wagon had been going for 10 years.
Right. It was...
I found the wagon. I'm on it.
And now it's back.
I think that Tim Duncan had a reduced role last season, but was incredibly integral to the way their defense played. And I think their defense is going to slide a lot. I think Boris Diaw was very integral to the way their team in general played. And with both of those guys gone, I think they're going to slide. They'll still be very good because a 55-win team is good. But I don't... And this is why I said the Clippers would be decidedly the second-best team in the West.
Yeah.
I think San Antonio is going to slide. They'll probably be the 4 seed, I want to say.
That's a 12-win slide, Andrew.
That is a 12-win slide.
That's a big one.
You know, I love Kyle Anderson, but I don't know. He might be a season away from filling those Boris Diaw shoes.
UCLA guy.
He's another UCLA guy. Kyle Anderson is that's my dude, though, because when the UCLA had Kyle Anderson and Shabazz, they were playing in Brooklyn, and I was watching the game with Charlie Widows, and we're like, do we like Shabazz? It's like, I don't know if we like Shabazz, but we like Kyle Anderson.
So, oh, for sure. You chose correctly.
Yeah.
I'm over Shabazz. Yeah, Manu and Parker, another year older. I could see where they would slide. They just never do.
They never do.
They just never do.
It has to happen at some point.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet on it being this year.
I think, what do they call it? They call it gambler's fallacy to expect that there's going to be regression. Even though the odds stay the same every year. I don't know if that applies here.
I think it might. It sounded smart and fancy.
It sounds smart.
Yeah.
But I think I dropped it inappropriate, like in a situation that didn't apply and Kevin Pelton made fun of me.
Oh, well, that's mean. That's just mean.
So now whenever I try to use smart sounding terms, I inflect upwards like a question mark, like this. so that I don't get ridiculed too poorly.
I like that. I do that too. Or I just say words incorrectly and just roll with it. Kevin Pelton over under wins 0. So what do you think about that, Kevin Pelton? You're not getting a single win this year. Last team. You ready?
One team left. The team that everyone thought was going to win the title and then didn't.
Ugh.
Historically good regular season, 73 wins. The big winners of the offseason, managing to secure Kevin Durant in just what required such a bizarre sequence of events for that to even be possible.
It really did.
The Golden State Warriors. Do we even have to list anything that they did other than the fact that they brought in Kevin Durant?
That's No, that just about covers it.
Yeah, Kevin Durant. Patrick McCaw. I have to shout this guy out because I remain steadfast and convinced that not that he's going to be as good as Jimmy Butler, but he'll be the Jimmy Butler of this most recent draft.
Wow,
Jimmy
really?
30th. One of the better two-way players in the league. And McCaw was taken 38th, and I think he's going to be one of the better two-way players in the league.
Wow, McCaw's your dude.
McCaw's my dude.
It is fun to say his name, also.
McCaw!
Every time he scores. That's fun.
I was in the Clippers draft media room the night of the draft, and when McCaw had fallen, I thought that the Clippers were going to get him, and I was like, McCaw, my dude! And then the Warriors snatched him up one pick ahead.
Did you say anything?
I did. I told people, and they're like, oh, yeah, I like McCaw.
Did you run upstairs to the war room and just knock on the door and just throw out some McCaw calls?
Draft McCaw is what I did.
Oh, man. I actually sat in the Clippers draft room once. Did I tell you that?
Oh, no, you did not.
Yeah, I was in there, and it was really it was when Olshay was the GM.
Uh-huh.
And it was really interesting to watch. I wish that you could have been in there so you could have dropped McCaw if he's the next Jimmy Butler.
Who did they pick that year you were in the draft?
Who was it? I think that was the Reggie Bullock draft.
The Reggie Bullock draft.
Yeah.
Did you approve that? Did they look to you? They said, DJ, what do you think?
No, Neil didn't look to me for advice at that point.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't until later when he drafted, you know, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum that he really leaned on me.
That's it shows. So anyways, back to the Golden State Warriors. No one predicted that they would go from 67 wins to 73.
Yeah.
And it seems insane to set an over-under mark at 70 or greater.
You can't.
Because only two teams have ever done that.
Right, you just can't.
Right, so I went just below that. I set it at 69.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
I set it at 68.5, but I'm regretting my decision now.
You'd be saying just under then?
I'm gonna say 69 too. I changed my answer to 69.
Nice you said it twice.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that does it.
That's it.
We got them locked in.
Everyone that sat and listened to this, I think they can feel confident that every one of these bets is going to pay off.
I mean, we just made everyone rich. I think
they should make a. They should just go ahead and put this into a 15-team parlay. Just wait for the money to roll in after the season's over.
That's a gambler's fallacy. I think.
It's something.
Yeah. Okay, so don't do that. All right, so we're going to do the Eastern Conference next week with Andrew. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Andrew, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
What's your Twitter handle again?
My Twitter handle is @AndrewTheHahn. The is not my middle name. It's just a common name, so I have to have some kind of differentiation.
That would have been really cool if that was your middle name, though.
If my middle name was The?
Yeah.
An article?
Yeah.
I guess so.
It's a little different, right?
I suppose.
Like, I don't know. I think that would have been cool. All right, well, hit Andrew up on Twitter. Tell him all the nice things and whether he's wrong or right about all of his predictions.
Don't tell me if I'm wrong. Only tell me if I'm right.
Definitely tell him if he's wrong. Thanks for coming on again. That's it. Hope you guys enjoyed our Western Conference preview. If you did, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes or one of those friendly reviews if you're feeling extra spunky. We'd love to hear from you. Also, you can email the show, fosterdj3@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions, or if you just want to yell at me for having birds in the background for these two shows. I'm working on that, I promise. Actually, I'm not working on that because that makes it sound like I'm going to kill the birds. I'm actually just going to shut the windows. Not going to kill any birds. But thank you again for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. We'll see you soon.
I'll hit the game winner. It's not over, babe. I'll hit the game winner. Baby, believe in me. I'll hit the game winner. Baby, believe in me.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.